Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together, one frame at a time. Hey guys, I'm Randy Unger, and this is another episode of Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together, one frame at a time. And you may have noticed a slight change in our background here. Our little environment has changed. We are currently in the Manhattan Neighborhood Network's podcast studio. And I want to welcome my critics today. We have Rachel Kolb. Welcome back, Rachel.
Very happy to be back.
And Mr. Eric Godfrey. Eric.
Hi. Good to be here.
Good to see you again. And through Zoom, we have Mr. CJ Oakland. Hey, CJ.
Hello, everyone. I'm here just looking like Zordon. Down on all of you.
Yes, you are. It's kind of comforting in a weird way. I don't know. But
it does feel like you should be giving us a mission.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Yep. To review movies.
We need to talk about good movies.
Yes.
I need a pack of teenagers to do it.
I don't think you could do that anymore. You get in trouble for that.
True.
That's true, yeah. Yep. That's
if we learned anything from Quiet on Set.
Yeah. It's a little taboo at this juncture. So, guys, we're going to be discussing two films tonight, as usual. One is still in theaters. It's Love Lies Bleeding, and this is a lovely story. It's a romantic thriller about two people. One is a gym owner, played by Kristen Stewart, and she falls in love with a female bodybuilder, played by Katie O'Brien. And basically, it is their love story in the middle of this weird kind of murder adventure. They're trying to cover it all up. It's so well acted. The atmosphere is perfect in this movie. It's got a very Coen Brothers, David Lynch vibe to it. And I really enjoyed it. I think this may be on my top 10 for the year so far. But Rachel, your thoughts on Love Lies Bleeding?
I really enjoyed this movie. It was definitely different from what I was expecting, having seen the promotions for it. Mm-hmm. The trailer, I feel like, maybe led it to be a little bit more that it was more supernatural or more like horror forward, whereas it's much more like a neo-noir, I would say. I say that I think that the comparison to Lynch and to the Coen brothers is very appropriate.
Yeah. And, yeah, it just keeps you guessing, keeps you on your toes, which I loved. Eric, how about you? Thoughts on the film?
I was a big fan of it, too. It was a good neo-noir thriller, and it was very sexy.
It was sexy.
It was very, very, very sexy in that regard. I really like Katie O'Brien, especially, I think. Like, this is kind of her big, major role. Like, right. It was kind of weird because it's the only other thing I'd seen her in was Mandalorian.
Okay.
Where she's in, like, you know, in these big imperial clothes.
Is so she like a warrior?
She's just like a...
it's like an officer. She's just like
a security officer.
And you have no idea. She's completely ripped.
She's in those big imperial clothes.
Right,
like underneath it, she could just probably bench Pedro Pascal.
nice. Well, yeah, this is the first time I've seen her in anything. Mm-hmm. And if this is any indication, I think she has a really bright future in film TV, obviously.
Yeah.
So I was mesmerized by her performance. I thought she was fantastic.
Agreed. Yeah.
And I know she had to audition a number of times to get this part, too. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad that they finally cast her.
Yeah, I think she was really perfect at this role. And I think that her and Kristen Stewart really had great chemistry together.
That was the best part of the movie, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And, of course, Ed Harris being a creeper.
Of course. and Ed Harris is actually the common thread between this film and the second film we're going to be reviewing, which I'm going to reveal in just a few minutes after I hear Zordon's response. What did you think of Love Lies Bleeding, sir?
Oh, I loved Love Lies Bleeding. Just a fantastic movie, like a great, just messy, gritty, like queer crime thriller, which we definitely need more of those coming out.
Yeah.
Like, I love just the energy of it was amazing. It has a kind of surreal realism to it, where it's just like things where like you're not sure if these are like really happening or like how the characters are reacting to it. It's so well done.
Yeah.
Katie O'Brien was amazing. Kristen Stewart was fantastic. Yeah. And yeah, also Ed Harris, just the look he had where he came out with like the skull out of like the shaved head with like the long messy hair. I was actually watching a movie with my brother where there's just some old guy with terrible hair, and he just looked at me and he's like, they don't give movies parts where, like, a gross old guy with the worst hair you've ever seen. And I'd already seen Love Lies Bleeding, and I was taken to see him to see it later, and I was like, boy, do I have an Ed Harris role for you. It is perfect.
He reminded me so much of a Grand Theft Auto, like, villain, or, like, a guy who would be, like, giving a mission. Like, I need you to go get, right. 50 packets of drugs.
Bring it back here. Well, if they ever do a GTA movie, I think we have to cast Ed Harris in that.
True.
He was perfect in this. Like, he's mostly the reason why I wanted to see this movie in the first place, because I love everything he's done. I don't think he's ever given a poor performance.
We're also not calling out our new Dave Franco
for
the greasiest, messiest.
Dave Franco
played a perfect,
No spoilers on that.
Yeah, so we have a creepy Franco also.
Yes. Who is also very good.
Mm-hmm.
And poor Jenna Malone.
Yeah.
Poor girl has suffered throughout this film.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I want to mention that this is a recent release by A24 Films.
Yes.
Which, as you know, we've discussed many A24 films. This company can really do no wrong. I mean, Bo is Afraid was kind of lackluster, but this is a return to form for A24, and I feel like it's another strong entry in their filmography. So
absolutely. Trailers, just the trailers alone for this movie, I thought were, like, before the movie even started, I was making my list of, okay, here's all the next movies that I can look forward to coming out later this year.
Of course.
And actually, before we move on to the next movie, I want to make sure to mention there is another movie that, especially the ending of this movie, really reminded me of, which was Let the Right One In.
Okay.
And if you've seen both movies and if you've seen the ending of both movies, I think that you will understand this. But I think that they have a very similar through line of someone that is isolated. And especially with Let the Right One In, the fact that I believe the original source material is a much more queer storyline.
Okay.
I think that there's a lot of similarities and a lot of parallels between the two as far as the type of story that they're telling and the type of people that are ending up together.
Okay.
Especially kind of that your protagonist in both of them is a very vulnerable person.
Okay.
So.
Huh.
Yeah, I've not seen Let the Right One In, and, like, I hadn't thought of that, but that really is, like, they do match up very well in terms of the theme of just love is a beautiful thing and also incredibly destructive, and it could just be both at the same time.
And I'm going to add Let the Right One In on my list.
Yes, never please had the pleasure. It is a great movie.
I know you wanted me to say, like, this isn't really a spoiler, but I do love that the movie opens with Kristen Stewart cleaning up and ends with Kristen Stewart cleaning up.
That's hilarious. I just want to talk a little bit about Kristen Stewart's acting. I've mentioned this before. She's kind of a one-note actress, and it's very frustrating because I know she's got potential, and there are glimmers of hope here in her performance because she does show some range. But for the most part, she's always kind of mopey and throughout her roles, and it's just disappointing.
I see again a little bit what you mean, but I feel like the problem is, like, if you're going to do that one note, do it well.
Yeah.
And then that's where.
Yeah. And I would say in this, she didn't strike me so much as mopey as someone that lives in an environment that they're constantly scared for their own safety. Okay. And so they're trying very much to fly, not to reference the show's name, but Under the Radar. She's very much someone that's trying to, she's constantly trying to make herself small, which makes the dynamic between her and Katie O'Brien's character so interesting, because Katie O'Brien is all about making herself bigger and taking up more space. Kristen Stewart throughout the entire movie is hunching. She is constantly pulling herself into herself.
Right.
And as far as Kristen Stewart's career, I do think that she's pretty great, and I think that I would love to see more chances for her to do comedic roles, because especially Happiest Season, I thought that she was fantastic in Happiest Season, which is kind
Your
of a new
Christmas movie.
My favorite new Christmas movie. It is now an annual watch for me.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
And
that was a great movie too. I like Kristen Stewart as an actor. Like, I love her and Robert Pattinson both started in Twilight and got so much, like, rap for that. But it's, like, they're both really actually great actors, and they've made such, like, great, like, challenging, like, messy roles ever since. And I love that that's been their career trajectory. Mm-hmm.
There is a movie that I do keep coming back to that Kristen Stewart was in a couple years back called Camp X-Ray.
Yeah, I've heard about that one. Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
So for those who have not seen Camp X-Ray, she plays a guard at Guantanamo Bay, and she sort of forms kind of a weird friendship with one of the inmates.
Hmm.
And that was actually a nice, refreshing change of pace from her. Camp X-Ray, I would check that out if you guys haven't seen it.
I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah.
And also, before we move on to our second review, I wanted to mention the aesthetic of the film.
Yes.
Now, it takes place in 1989.
And it was very 80s.
And it felt like 1989. I mean, even though I was 4 years old during that time,
mm-hmm.
it felt just the music and the lighting and the vibe of the whole thing. It really worked well for me. So
yeah.
I'm happy to. And no less, A24 was responsible. So
I
enjoyed the fact that it just was very small.
Yeah.
This little out of nowhere podunk town and
yes.
just great crime thriller there. That's my jam. So
yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah. And not only because, of course, the 80s are a big time for bodybuilders, still a thing today, but definitely the height of it really seems to be in the 80s.
Right.
It was also a time before social media. It was a time before kind of the fact that if you were living in a small town and you didn't have resources to leave it, you were, again, coming back to the notion of isolation.
Right.
The fact that the first shot of the movie is that shot of the night sky, which is clearly mm-hmm. from out in the desert,
right.
and the feeling that you are just entirely alone, and that there is the only way that you get really a look at stars like that is if there really is nothing around,
mm-hmm.
if there's no city lights, if there's nothing to interfere with that.
It's almost like an alien planet in some shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt mm-hmm. you could really feel the isolation. I agree with you on that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love the Coen brothers. I love David Lynch. This was right up there with the best of them.
Yeah,
and
no, I was telling Rich, it felt like very much like Blood Simple, and like I wasn't.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what I was like. Or yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
Blood Simple is a classic.
Yeah,
and yeah, I could definitely see your point there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and definitely Lynch, definitely delving into like Lynch with some of the very very weird aspects of the story and a lot of the sort of really interesting visual choices going on.
Again, with the soundtrack, very dream-esque, dreamlike, and I wanted more of the film. I thought it was a good runtime, but mm-hmm. I really wanted more of these characters, more of this world, because it was really there's a lot of potential here for more stories in this area with these characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
if they come up with an idea for a sequel, I'd be down. Just mm-hmm. see what these two end up getting up to. In the next town and obviously get into more trouble.
Or even like a spiritual successor, a spiritual sequel. Not really directly related to it, but kind of the same tone and vibe. Because I think this movie, I think it's a great film. It's a winner.
You could even do a prequel with Ed Harris's character and his rise to power as the gun runner.
Yes, I like that.
Do almost like what they're doing with X and Pearl and Maxine, but just do like a series of movies within this universe.
The prequel is the perfect vehicle to expand on that universe.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see, hopefully.
Yeah.
Love keeps bleeding.
Yeah. Nice. And speaking of Ed Harris, that leads us to our second review of the evening. And this film, this is our retro review. So this is from 2005. And it is A History of Violence. And it is a very good, very taut thriller from David Cronenberg, which stars Viggo Mortensen as a small-time diner owner who basically thwarts a robbery and ends up killing the assailants. And basically becomes a city-wide hero because of his efforts in that attempt. And basically, this attracts the attention of some not-so-savory individuals led by Ed Harris, who has mafia ties. And he's just a very, very scary guy, very sinister. And the whole movie is basically Viggo trying to protect his family from this dark underworld, and I think the results are just fantastic. I remember seeing this around the time it came out, and it really scared me. You know, basically 20, almost 20 years later, I'm still scared of this movie. And it is so good. The performances are top-notch. Cronenberg is perfect. You know, the direction is great. The music's even good. Howard Shore gives a very good score. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I can't praise this movie enough. If I were reviewing movies professionally in 2005, I think this might be my number one.
I should have looked up what else came out that year, but I didn't see it in theaters. I did see it the year. I think the most interesting thing was the fact that up until we watched it, Rachel had never even seen the premise. She went in blind.
Yep.
She had no idea what this movie was.
The only
was
thing
about.
That I knew about it was that it was Cronenberg, and I knew the poster with Viggo, but that was that was it. I did not know anything else about it, and of course the controversy about William Hurt being nominated. So I knew that he showed up at some point, but I didn't know the context, didn't know his character. And it was really wonderful to see a movie like that I knew that I was in good hands with the people involved with it, but I had no idea where the story was going.
Okay.
So for me, I kind of got the secondhand fascination of, like, watching her. Like, it's kind of like, I wonder how she's going to react to everything.
Right. Yeah. I pretty much went into this cold as well. I remember, I believe I saw it in college. There was a lending library for DVDs, and this was one of them. And after this, I had to watch pretty much everything Cronenberg. And it was one of the greatest binges of my life. But, CJ, History of Violence, thoughts, sir?
Oh, fantastic movie. I'm a huge Cronenberg fan. So it's like, I love like his weird like body horror like films. And then seeing just like a very like toned down, realistic, just like crime thriller is like, it feels like this shouldn't be the guy for it. But it's done so well. Like the characters... Like, all the actors have great direction, everyone gives a fantastic performance, and when the violence does hit, it's so fast and sudden and just shocking, and it's like, it just permeates through the whole movie, like this idyllic life where it's just, you know something horrible is coming around the corner, you don't know when, and it really puts you in the character's shoes.
The violence was handled like a horror movie.
Yeah.
It was very gory in certain parts, but not like gratuitous, like, it wasn't, the whole movie wasn't just a splatter fest.
Yeah.
There were just very specific scenes of action, and just the makeup effects were brilliant. And it's a very bloody film, but in select moments, especially in the final act with William Hurt and all that.
It reminds me of I was listening to there was a review of Tim Burton when he did Big Fish, and about how much that was actually a big change for Burton, because while you had the extraordinary moments of the stories and all that, that for a lot of the movie of Big Fish, there is the ordinary.
Right.
And for Burton, that was actually more of a change, because here he is filming this ordinary stuff and then getting the bird nest, the circus, and all that such. And I feel like for the Cronenberg, it's like, here's small town USA, and here's, you know, normal stuff. And then, like you said, then there's these moments of just extreme boom, like, oh, God.
Those moments of terror, moments of horror,
they
should just come in small doses. Yeah.
It's like watching a man get his face caved in by Viggo Mortensen.
See, that's the scene I'm thinking of in their front lawn.
Yeah,
and it actually reminds me a lot of Fargo, again, coming back to the Coen brothers again.
Nice.
Like, especially, like, the moments of very gratuitous violence reminds me of things like, say, the wood chipper in Fargo.
Yeah.
A lot of those, like, very violent spurts.
But in this one... there's really no humor, which is a bit of a letdown. There should have been some moments of levity.
It's weird because I kind of think there is in the characters, like the fact that Viggo is kind of, here we go, I'm just a diner owner. And even Ed Harris's are like comic booky, like, hey, we come from Philadelphia, we send a, hey, I'm the mobster kind of guy. So, like, it is kind of this weirdly, but it's just, I think it's because of the notion of the idyllic, you know, with that huge violence underneath it all, the history of violence there.
Yeah.
But that's what I do love about this movie, is the notion of identity.
Yeah.
Initially, I was very confused by the score of this, because the beginning of it does very much match the small town. Like, it almost feels a little bit like it could be like Spielberg or something from like the 90s or 2000s. And But then, like, as the movie goes along, it just gets progressively darker and, like, more sinister.
Yeah.
And, like, makes you much more tense. And it like, grew on me. I really like what they were doing with that, reflecting the themes and kind of the journey that these characters are going on to that final dinner scene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that was a really sweet moment with the daughter.
Is it sweet? That's the question. Yeah.
I know this was based on a graphic novel, and CJ, I'm looking at you because I know you're a fan of novels.
Yeah, I haven't read it. I do know, like, what it's about. Basically, the first half is roughly the same, like, the setup, but it ends in, like, a very different way. And honestly, I think that was a change for the better. Like, the ending kind of goes more into his past and, like, him having to do, like, one final thing. But it's, like, I think making the movie focus more about this man and, like, his family is was a much smarter choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Focusing on identity. I think
it made it a lot tighter movie, yeah.
Yeah, sadly, I've not read the comic book either.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that should be our homework.
Well, this was that time where I loved that everybody was, you know, still looking for comic book movies. We hadn't had the Marvel stuff yet, but everybody was looking at, like, Watchmen, History of Violence, like that.
American Splendor.
Like, that's those were the comics they were looking stories. For. Yeah, and just Ghost like these World. And just these one offs, not one to build a cinematic universe off of.
Right. That's great. So Viggo Mortensen, I mean, I've always thought he's a capable actor, good strong leading man, but I think this movie, it really elevated him in terms of status and popularity, because he was just fantastic in this. Before this, I had really known him in smaller parts. He was in Crimson Tide. He played Denzel Washington's, like, friend in that.
Yeah. But, smaller parts like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, you know, Grinch is part of a larger ensemble for that.
You know, that small indie movie, Lord of the Rings.
But I really was not really familiar with much of his work.
Yeah, well, for me, I was more from, like, Lord of the Rings was the only thing I was really, and Hidalgo.
Mm-hmm. Hidalgo.
I remember that, yeah.
And so this was really the first post Aragorn Viggo, and it's like, okay, now that you're no longer the fantasy hero, what you got?
Wait, was this the year after Return of the King?
This would have been 2005, after. This would have been right after.
That was 2004, I think.
Yeah, it would have been the year after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I specifically love, like, this movie, History of Violence, and also Eastern Promises, which was also Cronenberg.
Love him in Eastern Promises.
Viggo Mortensen. I think that's, like, that's a fantastic role for him. He does that so well.
He was perfect.
Or just playing, like, a Russian gangster.
Most terrifying naked knife fight.
Oh, that's such a great scene.
Yeah, it was a good one. I think that was the movie he followed this with Eastern Promises. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is, it's fantastic. I love Eastern Promises.
Yeah.
I think what I love most about Viggo in this is that he gives me the biggest scare in this whole movie. Mm-hmm. And it's the scene with him and Maria Bello on the stairs.
Oh, God, yeah.
That mm-hmm. sequence is just handled so brilliantly by the both of them.
Yeah.
And you really see, like, that full monster coming out that point.
Because I agree, the mask that he wears, that he does pull off, you know, oh, gee, shucks, small town. But then as you start, like, especially when the mask finally slips, like, when he finally is like, I should have killed you. And you see there's Joey come out.
And his son's right there.
And his son's right there.
He hears it.
And so it's like, when you actually do get the sense that, like, even to the point where she asks, like, are you just, like, are you multiple personalities? Are you schizophrenic? Like, what is this? It's like, you could be believable that there are, like, a Jekyll and Hyde, a Joey, and a Tom.
Yeah. And, you know, the scene on the staircase was particularly effective because it reminded me a little bit of an earlier Cronenberg film called Crash, which was about kind of sexuality and body horror kind of colliding, literally colliding.
Yeah.
And basically they're on the steps and it's like they're getting bruised up and, like, roughed up. And it was, like, very, very disturbing, actually.
Yeah,
it was kind of sexy, but more disturbing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think at the time that it came out, Siskel and Ebert were very much not fans of it.
Well, Ebert.
I think
Ebert gave it 3.5 out of 4 stars.
Ebert was more of a defender of it, but I know that for Gene Siskel especially, he was very particularly sensitive when it came to violence against women.
I don't think Siskel would have seen this one. I think he would have been.
Siskel passed. I think before passed. This.
Oh, sorry. I'm talking about Crash.
Oh, Crash.
Yeah, Crash. Crash. You really did not like it.
Okay. No.
Yeah, but I think Ebert somewhat defended it, but I think he was much more a fan of History of Violence than.
I have no idea.
I also want to mention Maria Bello.
Yep.
Yes.
Who was fantastic in this. Another actress, an actor who I was not really familiar with prior to this film, but I think she gave a fantastic performance. I don't know who else was in the running for this role, but she gave such a very strong but subtle performance, and you can just see in her eyes like she's genuinely scared for what the heck is going on with her family.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know who this man is that she married, and that terrifies her. That terrified me.
Yeah.
So I think she pulled it off brilliantly. I think the son is very good, the actor who plays the son.
Yeah.
And even the sheriff. I mean, the whole cast is fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You believe that these characters are real.
Yeah.
And Cronenberg just assembled a great project. I'm really glad that he did this.
Yeah, film. It was a great revisit.
Yeah, and for people that aren't as familiar with Maria Bello's work, The Cooler with her and William H. Macy is also excellent. Nice. Really, really great movie.
The Cooler. Mm-hmm. That was from the early 2000s, I think.
That was around that time.
Yeah. And Alec Baldwin's also in that as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. William H. Macy plays a cooler, basically a human cooler at a casino that's owned by Alec Baldwin.
Oh, cool.
Because he is just the unluckiest man in the world. So.
Fair. And just real quick, I want to do a little Ed Harris filmography discussion. Aside from this, what is your favorite Ed Harris performance? CJ, you first.
I mean, I just recently watched The Abyss for the first time, and I think he did a good job with that one.
Yeah.
Like, just a very underrated James Cameron movie very early on. You could just see the seeds of, like, every movie James Cameron wanted to make after this.
Yeah. True.
The Abyss not get enough love.
Yeah, I think he did great, especially in, like, the third act. Mm-hmm. It would be, like, that's such a hard thing for an actor to go through, and, like, he did a great performance with it.
And plus, it's a very physical performance. Like, there's a bunch of scenes with him, like, trying to turn a hatch, and it's, like, you could just see that he's really struggling with this. And he just gives everything in this performance. Eric, how about you?
Gone Baby Gone.
Okay.
Love
them
in that. Nice.
Loved,
excellent.
Well, one of my favorite of love that movie. Affleck was amazing, and Ed Harris plays such a great like the conundrum that he presents.
Okay.
I love great performances all around, and he was fantastic.
So great. Mm-hmm. Rachel, how about you?
The first two that come to mind when I think of Ed Harris are Apollo 13.
Yeah.
And The Truman Show.
Oh, yes, of course.
Incredible in The Truman Show.
I forgot he was in The Truman Show.
How?
Yeah.
Oh, he's so wonderful.
I was thinking, like, he's God.
It's really not him. Like, it's not his usual self in Truman.
It's darkly sinister.
It is, but it's just like him playing the artist with a vision.
Well, it's artist with a vision. But at what cost?
Yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah.
Was like a template for the tech billionaires we kind of have now.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These people who talk about their big ideas and don't really think about the human cost of what they're doing.
Yep.
Now,
exactly.
And then another performance with an artist with a vision, Pollock, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say Apollo 13 for me as well. Love that movie so much.
Easy,
and I actually spoke with an astronaut today. I interviewed an astronaut today. Mm-hmm. And Apollo 13 did come up.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll hear that interview in the next week or so. And also, one of my all-time favorite films, Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yes.
Which is an ensemble cast for the ages.
Yep.
Ed Harris is just, he's just right in there with some of the greats. Al Pacino, Jack Lemmon, Alan Arkin, Alec Baldwin, et cetera, et cetera. And he just gives a fantastic, volatile performance in that.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Ed Harris, I don't think he's ever really given a bad performance from what I've
seen. I can't think of one if he has. Or at least I haven't seen it.
He's just a great actor.
I think even if the movie surrounding him is not the best, he's always interesting. He always does something interesting or finds something interesting to pull out of that character.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a long mullet hair.
Yeah. Or just long strands.
Eaten bugs.
Oh, God. Spoiler. Oh, man. All right, so I would say I would recommend Love Lies Bleeding. I think it's unanimous.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 100%.
Yes.
Yeah. And A History of Violence, too.
Yes.
Yeah, now that I've seen it.
That is absolutely worth the revisit.
Definitely. And it's going to be 20 years old next year. So we may or may not revisit that next year. So we'll see. But so we are almost about out of time here. And I just want to go around if there's any plugs. CJ, I know you always have something cooking.
No, I got nothing cooking today? Right now. I'm out of commission. I've got tendonitis. So
okay. Fair. All right. Rest up, buddy. Feel better. Eric, how about you? Anything?
No, and I don't have a tinnitus that exists. So
as I was at the middle of that question, I should have realized that there's nothing that you're promoting.
No.
But you're a good man. So.
Yeah. Here we go.
Promoting being good.
I'll do that.
Yes. And last but not least, Rachel, plugs for you.
Yes. You can find me on Instagram at Second Act Bake Shop. You can find our sweet dog, Dobby, on Instagram at Dobby the House Doggo. And you can also, if you stop by Chisiamo in Midtown Manhattan, you can see me plating desserts, depending on what day you stop by. So
that's great. Excited to visit and sample that. So as for me, you can catch all new episodes of Under the Radar on Slam Radio through SiriusXM every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And also the video version of this podcast will appear on Manhattan Neighborhood Network, and that's every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. And as always, feel free to subscribe and share to the Under the Radar YouTube channel. So I just want to thank Rachel, Eric, and CJ. This was amazing. Our inaugural show at Manhattan Neighborhood Network, the in-person studio. Yeah. And, I want to thank you for your time today. This was amazing. Yeah.
This was great.
It was fantastic.
It's great. So, guys, I'm Randy Younger. This has been Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together one frame at a time. We'll see you next time. Take care.